Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 166, Rhymes with Crystal, is coming at you right now. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you will find me, your host for this episode, The Brant, and my cat, Emily, as well. And check out our new YouTube channel, Step Into the Portal. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And for more podcasts, you can go to www.DiceTowerNetwork.com. I am so excited for tonight, from coast to almost coast, East Coast to almost West Coast. I've got a special guest with me, a good friend, Crystal Dax. Crystal, how are you?
I am doing spectacular, and I am so honored to be on your show.
Oh, I am honored to have you here. It is so fun. It was like 2 months ago. It was, is this podcast going to be no more, or am I going to come up with a new plan? And it struck me, why don't I just talk to all the people that I haven't gotten to see for the last 18 months, and we'll just talk about games, and it's been awesome. So I was so happy when you said that you would be on the show, because you are just a ball of joy and energy that I like being around, because we are very similar. There's a kinship, yes, between us.
Absolutely. Sure. And we do tend to, you know, gravitate toward one another when we see each other at conventions, but obviously that hasn't been happening recently.
I know. Yeah. So I did get the okay for Gen Con, so I should be at that one, and then we'll see what happens. And I am fully vaccinated, so that's good.
Nice. I'm actually getting my second shot tomorrow as of the time we are recording this. So I will be fully vaccinated soon. And my two best gaming friends here in town are both either vaccinated or almost vaccinated as well. So like, we'll be able to game in person without masks, which like is, I don't mind wearing a mask, you know, like that is totally okay. But I also appreciate just being able to be around my friends and not feel worried. You know, like for me, the pandemic has always been less about me and more about the risk of spreading it to other people if I were to pick it up. And so being able to hang out with my friends without that fear is something I'm really looking forward to.
Well, I can tell you 100% that's my feeling as a teacher. I mean, every day I go in and I've got, you know, other teachers and students that I have to, you know, I'm certainly more concerned with than myself and whatnot. And then, of course, a family to come back to. And it wasn't long ago that I had 7 people living in my house. Now it's 3. Brian, our store owner, he bought a house, had a kid, and they moved out. So they've had their house since December. But through most of the pandemic, we had 7 people. So it was like, you know, whatever I do, it's putting other people at risk and whatnot. So
yeah. And that's the kind of the thing that baffles me, I think, the most about people who have been averse to the preventative measures. It's like, don't you want to like protect other people? But I know that not everybody has that altruistic mindset. So
yeah, I know for our store, I mean, people keep asking because there's, and not even wrongly, but there's stores where you can go in and they're kind of like charging, like you can have this table for 2 hours and then we clean the whole thing and they've got barriers up, and I'm totally cool with that. But we've just opted for the no playing in the store and whatnot. And I've been lucky because we've been able to stream from the back room. So I'm back there in terms of that. And the one person I've been streaming with, kind of we stuck each other in our bubbles so that we could do that and be able to stream, you know, together. So we've been, that's another person I've just been extra careful for, you know, in terms of all that. The few times we've had scares, we've just said, well, we'll cancel the stream. Like there was no, the stream is more important than each other's health, you know?
Absolutely. And I've just been streaming with people who don't live with me for the past year. So, I mean, we started streaming on Twitch back in 2017, I want to say. And we did it infrequently, but then a year ago, Ambie and I were both like, yeah, we should do this more often because we have nothing better to do. And it seems like something that people are kind of, they have an appetite for. And now we have a regular streaming schedule. We stream at least 2 days a week, every week without fail, and often more than that. But we have 2 regularly scheduled streams. And now we're part of the Tabletop Live Network, which is a group of Twitch streamers dedicated to diversity, inclusion, and other really awesome stuff in the tabletop space on Twitch. And it's been honestly like one of the best things that's happened to us. The people we've met and gotten to know better and the friends that we've formed and the community that has formed around board game Twitch has just been absolutely delightful to see.
Yeah, I've watched some portions of those. They tend to be 24 hours, so that's a little bit of a commitment, but I've jumped on to see you or to see Dave and Ilka or Brothers Murph, or I know there's so many other people, I'm not even trying to exclude them, but
right. Oh, absolutely. And that's what's cool about it is we're continuing to add new people to TLN all the time. And so each event will be a little bit different, and we do try and make sure that we're highlighting, you know, up and coming streamers as well. You know, they have to be affiliate on Twitch to be eligible to join TLN, because we do want to make sure that the people in TLN are dedicated to Twitch streaming and specifically streaming board game content. Right. But yeah, like we've had some really cool new people pop in that like I didn't know of at all before this, and it's just been so lovely.
I'm so excited to talk to you that I was just ready to talk to you, but I didn't actually give you a chance to promote your stuff. So if people don't know who Crystal Dax is or what Crystal Dax does in the board game community, please tell us. I was so excited to talk to you. I know. Just catch up with a friend that I forgot to give you that chance. So go ahead and tell us about the various things you do.
I literally do the exact same thing to myself. I'm just so excited to talk to a camera, to like people in chat, that I'll forget to introduce my own self. So do not feel bad at all. Yes, my name is Crystal Dax, and I am one half of the Board Game Blitz podcast, also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Ambi Valdez and I do a bi-weekly 30-minute podcast. We are actually coming up on our 5th anniversary, which I'm really excited about. We were the first board game podcast to be hosted entirely by women, and I am really proud of that fact. And I'm even more proud that that is now not that unique. I am so happy that more women are making board game content now than were before. We also, like I said, have a Twitch channel, twitch.tv/boardgameblitz, where we stream at least twice a week. I do escape room games on Tuesday evenings. Ambi streams on Thursday evenings, usually print and play games or roll and write games, but we mix that up sometimes. Sometimes she and I will hop on together and play games on Board Game Arena with the chat, so our viewers can play games with us. We also occasionally will stream other content. Ambi streams jigsaw puzzles during weekdays, and we've streamed other things like Among Us and things like that as well on the channel. We also make video content for the Dice Towers YouTube channel. I specifically co-host a show called Dice Tower Tonight with Eric Summerer, which is every other Wednesday evening. And it is the most fun. Eric and I have really like become super close over the years. Everybody basically says that we're like brother and sister, and it's incredibly true. We definitely are cut from the same cloth, have so many things in common, and our unique brand of silliness like meshes really well with one another. So we have a blast every time we do that show, and we always play a game live during the show with the chat, like an interactive game where the chat gets to participate. And you'll notice that's a theme for me. A lot of the content that I make, I do try and make interactive and something that's participatory. I enjoy that more than just recording a thing and putting it out into the world and, you know, it just existing. I really enjoy the engagement that I get from making content on the internet. So yeah, those are the main things that I do. I also said that our Twitch channel is part of the Tabletop Live Network. There is an event every month, 24 hours of streams, 2-hour streams, 12 different streamers. And you can see the schedule for every event at tabletoplivenetwork.com. Ambi and I will not be featured in every event, but the streamers there are awesome. So I'm happy to promote them even when we are not part of a particular event. It's really quite delightful. And I think people who have not been watching board game content on Twitch maybe don't realize what they're missing out on, not just from the Tabletop Live Network, but in general. The amount of board game content on Twitch has increased exponentially, and it's so good. And it's the communities there, the people there, like you'll develop friendships with people in the chat immediately. And it's really, really neat.
Nice. Yeah, we were looking into that. I mean, we did the YouTube channel, and then we were looking at kind of restreaming. So it'd be Facebook and Twitch and different things. I know being unique to Twitch also has its own things, but admittedly, I'm the technician, and I don't like being the technician for getting all the things up and running, because I am the in front of a camera person and the ideas person. And so doing all the technical aspects are fun, because when I figure something out, Roy Candidate just helped me figure out how to do a green screen. So I was really excited about that and a couple things like that. So when I figure those things out, it's fun. But, you know, in general, that part exhausts me compared sometimes. So hopefully we'll, you know, as we grow and whatnot, we'll add some of those things and have some of that.
Yeah.
But definitely check out Twitch. There's lots of energy on Twitch too.
So much energy. And we basically had to make a decision, because if you want to monetize content on Twitch and become an affiliate, you cannot restream to other platforms at all. So we've just gone all in on Twitch for our content. And I think that that was a really good decision on our part, because of the ways Twitch monetizes things. And the money is not the reason we do it at all. Like, we don't make a lot of money from Twitch. That's not the reason, but it is really fun. You know, the bits and the subscriptions and all that, and the emotes we get to give to people when they subscribe. Like, we have a unicorn poo emote. It's just rainbow colored poo. And like, nobody needs that, but we all want it, right? Like, it's just fun.
Nice. That's awesome. Wow. So you are super busy.
I am. And that's all on top of my, you know, regular 8-to-5 marketing job for a credit card company. So I keep incredibly busy. I have friends that will reach out to me and be like, oh, hey, can we play a board game online tonight? And I'm like, I actually don't have any free evenings this week, which seems so odd in the midst of a global pandemic where I really haven't been leaving my house practically at all. But I've filled my schedule up pretty full. And that's always been a thing for me. My whole life, I've been somebody who always has to be doing something or I'm doing absolutely nothing. Like, there's no in between for me. I'll like binge watch a TV show for an entire day laying on the couch, or I'm going from thing to thing to thing to thing.
Yeah, I'm notorious for, because I'm up early, being a high school teacher too. I'm up early. So I'm notorious for, like, Kathy and I sit down on the couch and it's like, oh, should we watch something? And it's like, do you want me to fall asleep in 20 minutes? Because at night I'm just out, like it's over. So I'm not the best TV watcher. I'm like you. I go all day. And then when I finally sit, it's like, well, I think it's time for me to fall asleep. But I did do something yesterday that I haven't done in forever. And I don't know if it's very interesting to board game people or not, but I watched baseball.
Oh,
I watched the Yankees, and I am actually a reasonably big sports fan. I definitely grew up a giant sports fan, and you know, the whole, they get paid too much and yada, yada. I'm totally down with all that. And I understand, but I do enjoy it. You know, I've always enjoyed watching all those things, but I discovered without people to watch sports, I was really enjoying watching it with people like my dad. And so when I was a kid, well, a teenager in 1996, the Yankees won the World Series. And that was the first time in my life. So my dad said, hey, do you want to skip school tomorrow and go to New York City and go to the parade? And it was like, is this a question? Of course I want to go to New York City with my dad. And I could not tell you what information I lost out on from school that day, but I sure remember that day hanging out with my dad in New York City and seeing the Yankees parade. So I got a lot of good memories related to sports like that with my family members and with friends and whatnot. So I didn't know that I had the Yes Network on my cable, which is what the Yankees are on. It's like Yankees Entertainment and Sports or something. And I just, somebody said, oh, check it, you might have it now. And before it was like part of a package, but I guess there's more things. So I put baseball and I watched a baseball game, and I hadn't done that in so long. I really enjoyed baseball. I mean, just the ins and outs and the strategy to it is very much like a Thinky Euro, I guess, you know, in some
absolutely
sense with all that. So that was just the unique thing I did outside of games that was really fun.
For sure. No, I had a FOMO moment, you know, a few years back when my Royals won the World Series, and I didn't to go to the parade because the parade obviously was in Kansas City and I was here in Vegas. I watched the parade on TV, but I was bummed. Yeah. Kansas City's had a good last, it's been a little while now for the Royals, but between the Royals and the Chiefs, like growing up as a Kansas City sports fan, I didn't get a lot of wins. And as an adult, I've actually gotten to see some pretty cool stuff happen for my teams.
Yeah, that's awesome. So anyway, that was just a fun thing that I did recently. And I've really, like, as much as teaching, and people will say, oh, it's got to be exhausting, and there's definitely exhausting elements. There's really some interesting things that I've come to. So I teach math at an arts school. So that's just like step one to understand. and I'm not putting anything against artists. I am an artist myself as well, music and theater. But, you know, it doesn't always go hand in hand. And then this year we have students could choose to be at home on Zoom or they could be in the building with us. And very few tend to choose to be in the building, but I got a lot of camaraderie with those students more than ever before because we spend a lot of time together. Some of that has been great. So this past week was gorgeous for Connecticut. It's been 60 degrees, which is very warm temperatures. I guess by the time you get to April, that's more normal. In March, that's a lot harder because we can have snow still in March. So I'm in Hartford, which is the capital of Connecticut. I mean, it's dead smack right between New York and Boston. Like, that's exactly where it is. And not far from us is the Connecticut River. It's just, we just crossed under a highway. So I took my students on a walk. So we just went on a math walk looking for various shapes and mathematical things. And I had no idea what we would find. And we found so much. And we walked and we got up on this bridge over the Connecticut River and took pictures. And it was just awesome. Like, so much fun. We enjoyed doing that so much. So that was just really like one of those moments that, you know, obviously we don't want to have a pandemic, but had we not had a pandemic, I would not have experienced that moment with my students. And I know it was equally exciting for them. So it was just one of those days where we did something so different and it was just so memorable. And I was so happy to be part of that, you know, with them.
Absolutely. That's been one of my favorite things of the past year is, yes, like it has been horrifically tragic, the amount of people that we've lost and the, you know, we will be seeing ill effects from this pandemic for years to come. But I am really heartened by a lot of the positives that have come out of this really horrible situation. Like, yeah, a lot of people have done a lot of really good things, and that, you know, that helps warm my heart a little bit. And I'm also glad that we can kind of a little bit see the light at the end of the tunnel now with the vaccine and everything. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think we're getting there. Well, I think the people are here to hear us review games. You got some games to review?
I sure do.
Awesome. Why don't you go first?
Okay, so this one was specifically requested by you when you invited me to be on the show, so I had to bring it up.
Perfect.
It is a classic. It is the game that, I mean, it's basically a meme if you look at the original cover of the box, and that is Kalis.
Nice.
The king on the box is notorious, and I love that you're just going to go grab it right now. See, because if you go to Board Game Geek now, it doesn't have that guy on the box cover anymore, but he's so grumpy.
Yeah, I've got like an original version, I think, and that was just because I liked this game and I bought it.
Yeah.
Not even sneaking it out. I'm now in that bracket.
So I have still technically never played this game in its physical version. I've only played the digital version that's on Board Game Arena, which that has been the case for me for a lot of this pandemic, is a lot of the new games that I've learned have been online. But the implementation on Board Game Arena really gives you a feel for what the physical board game would be like. So for people who aren't familiar with Kalis, like I was, I mean, obviously I knew of Kalis, but I had just never played it. It is a worker placement game where you are building buildings, completing a castle by constructing it, earning prestige, and trying to earn the king's favor, and trying to make sure that the provost does not screw you over. That is the thing in this game that really, like everything else hinges on, is that there is a pawn that moves around a winding track of spaces where buildings can be constructed, and those buildings are the places where you'll be putting your workers, and players can move the provost back and forth, and based on his location determines which spaces on the track you can actually take actions from. So when you're putting your workers out, at some points there's a risk that if the provost moves, you will not get to complete the action that your worker was intended to do. That's the biggest high level overview of it. Like many Euro games, you are collecting resources to build things, to build other things. And some games like that, I bounce off of real hard. Like truly, I just am bored instantly and I have you know, it's just not fun. But for whatever reason, Kalis has struck me in a magical way, and I just love it. I've only played it a handful of times at this point, but I want to play it more. This is one that I will probably end up putting into my collection as well. And the meanness, I don't tend to like games that are incredibly mean, but the meanness in this is so strategic that it doesn't feel as bad, I guess. Like, you can see where the provost could theoretically move to, especially because unless a player goes to the spot that allows you to move him for free, they have to pay to move the provost.
Right.
And, you know, so you're looking at people's resources. It's incredibly, it's not easy to telegraph where the provost will end up, but you can kind of guesstimate. And so if I put my worker in a place that's risky, I know it's risky. And if somebody moves the provost, I'm not going to be mad at them because, of course, you know, like, if I'm going to get a lot of really cool resources, of course they would move it, but maybe they had to pay to do so. So there's a lot of really interesting decision making in this game. And I will say, as a person who does not tend to like all Euros, I love this one. So if you're somebody like me who gravitates more towards theme rather than pure mechanics, I would actually recommend checking out Kalis, and the implementation on Board Game Arena is great and free, so anybody can go try it, and I really love it.
Yeah, I mean, that provost is definitely like the memorable part, right? Because it creates those moments, like you're saying, in a story game or a party game or a take that game, that, oh, I remember that moment. But you're totally right, like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, it's like you have to diversify your portfolio. You need workers that are in safe places, and then you push your luck with that. When you're like, well, I don't really need these two coins for my plan, so if I spend those to put this worker and I lose it, I'll be okay. But if you put all your workers past, you're just asking for people to team up on you, you know?
Right. Like, if you put three workers at the end of the line and the provost is barely there, you know somebody is going to move it. You can't be shocked. It's not shocking or surprising meanness. It's all meanness that you can see coming, theoretically, if you're smart about it.
Yeah, but I think, to me, the game is so good because of the buildings. Like, there's all these such interesting buildings, and they really are like, oh, I want to build that. Like, the payoff is going to be soon, and it's really clever how you score points or resources when people use your building. So even when people use it, you're almost like anticipating that, right? It's that same kind of thing. Like, okay, if I get that building, I'll have these three, but if I don't, I'll go here, get these resources, plus have the one that somebody gave me. It's so good.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it adds a whole other layer to the provost too, because if somebody owns a particular building and they're going to get a resource if you go there, then they might be less likely to move the provost back to a place where you won't collect those resources, because now they won't collect anything either. So it's layers upon layers of strategy, yeah. But it's not complex strategy. And that's why I think I like it so much, because some Euro games tend to be a little bit more overly complex and thinky. And this one, while there's a lot of moving parts, it's fairly easy to grok once you understand what's going on.
So let me ask you, so I think of this as kind of one of those, you know, classic games that I would try to get people to play, even though the cover looks, you know, bland and everything. Well, another one that I think of that they redid that I wonder if you would like it is Brass. Have you played Brass by Martin Walsh?
I have not played Brass. Some of the people in my game group actually really like it, or liked it. Obviously, my game group hasn't met in now over a year, but prior to, you know, in the before times, that was a game that some of the people in my game group would come early to play before our like scheduled game time. And so I've watched it be played, but I've never played it myself.
Yeah, I'd be intrigued. I think it's going to take that step of overly thinky and overly complex that you were saying. But it is one, on the second play, you're like, this actually is pretty smooth. Like, the first play feels like, I don't know what I'm doing and I don't know why I'm doing it. But the second play, so if you give it those two sometimes, I would just suggest for people, learning four players makes it very long and very thinky. So I would keep it to two or three on the first plays. But, I mean, they made that game absolutely gorgeous, and that got people to play it, because the first edition was not gorgeous. It was very far from. But I remember back in the day, Zephyr was less than a year old, and I had the original Brass, and I found the two-player variant, and you would lay all these cards over the board to be able to play. And Kathy and I played on the floor while, like, Zephyr was on her little kid play mat. And we loved the game, playing on the floor. So
that's amazing.
It's a cool little memory of playing that.
Well, and you actually make a good point that I hadn't thought of for my own gaming career, but like I used to say that I didn't like Euro games, and that was never completely true, but it was kind of mostly true. And I think part of the reason for that is most of the time that I've been a hobby gamer, I've been gaming in groups where we would generally try and fit in as many people to a game as we could, because we want to include people and we want to make sure, you know, like, oh, this game will accommodate five people, so we'll put five in it. And so I wonder if that is part of the reason why I tended to not enjoy Euro games as much at a certain point, because we were always or often playing with the maximum player count. And some Euro games don't shine at their maximum player count, especially for a first-time game or a learning game. So I wonder if that's part of the reason that this pandemic has actually shown me that playing at smaller player counts is fine. Like, my first play of Kalos was two players, and somebody was like, oh, only two? That sounds boring. And I was like, no, it was super interesting. I really liked it. I've played it with more since then, but I think it's okay to not play at the max player count sometimes.
Yeah, it depends on your... It's a lot easier for me at a convention to play something, because it's like, I'm here to play all day, so let's play a four-player game. You know, and if it takes us 3 hours, it takes us 3 hours. Or if it's the only game we're going to play that night, I'm better with it. But if it's like one of those game days, like you said, where you're like, oh, I'm thinking I'm going to get three or four games in, and then you get one game in, and it was 4 hours, and you're like, eh, it was fun, but I would have played that game where they were laughing over in the corner.
And that's, yeah, when I used to meet with my game group, that was the thing. Like, there were people who thought that I was only willing to play, like, short, light, quick games. Because as the leader of the game group, I was always trying to bring, you know, the new people that had showed up into games. And I'm not going to bring them into a four-hour-long game, obviously. So I tended to only play shorter, lighter games at game night. And so at one point when I was sat down to play a really long, crunchy game, one of my buddies was like, wait, you like that? And I was like, yes, of course I do. But you just had never seen me play anything like that, because I was always trying to kind of be the gracious host and help out with stuff and things like that. So
nice. Well, you can't love Castell the way you love Castell and not like Euro games. That's all I'm gonna say.
I am waiting
for Eric Sommer to get shot. He has to get shot number two, so I can go to his new house on his new game table and finally teach him Castell, because that is going to be, I am going to be a pain.
Oh my gosh,
I'm going to be slightly annoying.
I'm going to be so bummed if he doesn't like it. Like, I hope
I know,
he doesn't
after all
me.
These years. We're getting the bag on his head for sure. Or did he do that at Dice Tower West?
I think I put the bag on his head at Dice Tower West.
I know, it will be funny if he's like, it was fun, but it wasn't as good as you guys built it up for seven years or whatever.
We probably ruined it. I mean, my first play of Castell was actually at BlitzCon. Ambi and I did a tiny convention in the Bay Area for 2 years, and Aaron Vanderbeek, the designer, was at BlitzCon and taught the game to me, like, before it came out. Like, it was already a full production copy, but it hadn't released yet. And being taught a game by its designer is a really special experience. And I'm not saying that it's always going to go well, but I was scared sitting down looking at the game. It looked like something that I might not like. And I was like, oh my God, if I don't like this, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't lie. My face is very, like, I telegraph all my emotions. I fell in love with it almost instantly. And it just, when you know that your first experience is the way the game is supposed to be, it's a really good feeling too.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not questioning any of that. All right. Well, first up for me, people who are watching this on the channel, Step Into the Portal, know that this is what they see me playing most often, Marvel Champions. This is a game that I have highly gravitated to. It has overtaken Gloomhaven as my number one game of all time. So the newest expansion is Galaxy's Most Wanted, which is Rocket and Groot. And I will just say that Rocket is my favorite superhero. If you don't want to count him as a superhero, it's fine. But Marvel of all time. So I was waiting for this. And Fantasy Flight Games was awesome, and they sent this to us. So we got a chance to play it, and we were the first in the world to play it. And we put it on our channel live, and was super fun. So it's a campaign where you're playing through various villains. It's kind of like, you know, they're using the MCU because the MCU is very popular, but they're really basing it off the comics to kind of go back to there. So you have those things. But what is super fun in Marvel Champions, and if you're watching on the channel, if you're not, then you can't see this, but is your heroes are a double-sided card, And so they have an alter ego side. Now these characters, Rocket and Groot, I guess I put Groot away, come in the box, and then Star-Lord and Gamora and Drax, they're all coming down the line. But it's really fun because you have like an ability on one side and higher card draw, and then every turn you can choose to flip, and you have your various actions that you can do. You're trying to beat a villain like Claw, and you have to reduce Claw, and he has several stages that you have to beat him. Claw actually comes in the original box. I don't have one of the other villains out here. But yeah, this is really fun. It's a big step up. So for people who are kind of considering Marvel Champions, I definitely suggest that you play it from the original box first. That would be your best place to go. And then they made a Rise of Red Skull campaign that has Spider-Woman and Hawkeye in it. And that's another good one to go to. This one, the difficulty level is definitely much higher. So you'd want to progress in kind of learning and playing. What's kind of neat about Marvel Champions, though, is in between, they just sell individual like hero packs. So if you were like, oh, I'm just really interested in, the Wasp or Ant-Man or something like that, you could just buy that pack and it's a ready-to-play deck. So it can remove some of the deck-building element that, that's been one of my things, I think, in this pandemic, is I've been playing so much two-player, three-player with the same people over and over because we don't have a game group, that I've, like, dug into games more than I ever have. Like, I've played games 10 times, and I never played games 10 times prior.
You and I are very, like, alike in that thing, too. Yeah, when somebody's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing a 1x100 challenge, I'm like, yeah. Who is she? I don't know her. Like, I yeah. think... the only game that I've potentially played 100 times is Strike. And that's only because I don't track most of the plays yeah. because we just play over and over and over again when we do play Strike.
Yeah. So this one's really fun. I don't know. Actually, you were part of my traveling fleet that year when I taught everyone I could fleet the dice game.
Yep. I was so excited to teach everybody, and I loved it.
It was so great. Well, it was just perfect because it came out like January 2nd in our store. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to herald this game. I am just going to associate me with this game. And it did. You know, Matt and Ben reached out to us, and Kathy and I playtested the one that just came out. I can't even remember the name of it. I feel so bad.
Three Sisters.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We play tested with them, and then there may or may not be another one in the works that I play tested. Uh-huh. So that was just a cool thing being part of that. But Marvel Champions is the game that I would love to go around and get people to play the same way that I did that, because I would just have some pre-built decks for people and, you know, play it on a simple casual level. But I think this would be really fun. Obviously for people who are into Marvel, it's going to be a lot more interesting. And card games, but it's got a lot of really clever mechanisms. And what I like the most is you can kind of use your hero, you kind of exhaust or tap them like you would in Magic, but then you have like a whole hand of cards that you can play, and it uses the Race for the Galaxy mechanism, where like, if I want to pay for this card, I discard another card, and every turn you get to fill your hand back up. So unlike Magic, where you're just drawing one card a turn, you get to draw a whole handful of cards. So it really just makes you feel like a superhero, you know, and you're, oh, I got to stop that bad guy in that minion, and I got to punch and kick and all this kind of stuff. So it's really been neat. But yeah, Galaxy's Most Wanted, I really like a lot. The difficulty, I think, could be a little off-putting for people, so it's not a good place to start. But it was really neat to get to play that one. And it was good, even like I said, for our channel, because that just got us a lot of views and for a small channel. So that was fun to be able to do. But yeah, Marvel Champions just continues to be awesome, and I love it. So
that's awesome. I'm so glad that you like the new stuff for it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, another game that I recently got to play, I actually got a review copy of this kind of early in the pandemic, and then just didn't have a chance to play it because pandemic. And I recently finally got it to the table, and it is a game from 2019 that I think flew under almost everybody's radar, and I think it should be on people's radars. And that is called Queens, and that is spelled Q-U-E-E-N-Z. So mm-hmm. Queens with a Z at the end. It's by Bruno Cathala, who I'm sure most of your viewers know of,
yes.
Published by Mandu Games and Rio Grande Games. It is a tile lane, set collection, pattern building game about orchids. and bees. And so players are beekeepers trying to bloom fields of orchids and attract bees to produce honey. Your field is made up of these polyomino shapes that you will continue to pick up and bloom throughout the course of the game. And then there is a main board that has a full grid of orchid tiles on it. And there is a beekeeper who travels around the outside of the board. Based on where the beekeeper is located on your turn, you can pick up orchids from the row that he is next to in varying quantities, depending on what colors of orchids you're picking up. So if you're picking up an orchid with a bee on it, you only get to pick up one tile. But if you're picking up orchids of multiple different colors with no bees on them, you get to grab more of them. And then you're placing all of those orchids onto your own field, and you're trying to orient them around beehives in order to produce different colors of honey. It is so much fun. Like, nice. People who like any type of polyomino, tile laying, pattern building, set collection games, like, this is so beautifully designed, and I have heard nobody talking about it. It came out in 2019, so my assumption is that it may be released right before the pandemic, and it would have potentially gotten more traction if the pandemic hadn't happened. But this is one of those games that now I've had it sitting on my shelf for like nearly a year unplayed, and I'm so sad about that I didn't play it sooner. I will be playing a lot more of it in the future. And honestly, like, I will admit, I have a little bit of a soft spot. Orchids are my favorite flower, so that makes it that much better for me. But the artwork is gorgeous, and the gameplay is super nice. So yeah, this is one that I would highly recommend. I've only played it two players at this point. Again, pandemic, but I want to try it with a higher player count at some point as well.
Nice. I wrote it down because I'm going to go look for it at our store. I can actually picture the cover of it. So
yeah, it's like
that means I probably shelved it.
A big yellow orchid on the front. So
nice. Yeah, because we ripped out everything in our store and redid everything from the ground up because we were closed for about 2 months completely. So we figured, well, what better time to redo everything? So we bought new shelving and made demo stations and all sorts of stuff. So I reshelved almost every game by hand. So they would be, and we did like outward facing for a lot of the boxes. So I'm trying to think where that one is. So I'm going to go look for that. But we have a whole Rio Grande section, so I think I can find it in there. So I'm going to check that one out.
I'm hoping that I can be a little bit of a champion for this one now that I've played it and fallen in love with it. Because I do think that this is one that a lot of people would really enjoy.
Nice.
So that's Queens with a Z instead of an S.
Bruno Catala, too.
I know, right? Like, come on, why are people not playing this?
Yeah, it's funny how some games just, you know, and it's funny even too, sometimes like there are games that come out and it's like play them voraciously for a month and then you just don't
disappear.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you bring it back and you're like, oh, wow, this is amazing. You know, it's stuck. All right. Well, I'm going to continue with my Marvel theme. This is actually just bigger than Marvel United. I've actually had this and reviewed Marvel United. I did the Walmart purchase on this when it came out in the fall. But we recently, and this is the annoying thing I do every time I have people on now, we have a playthrough on our channel, but it is fun to say, of the full pledge. What?
I was going to say, absolutely, and do not be afraid to promote your own content, man.
Oh, like, yeah.
There is somebody who wants to know about it.
Well, I'm promoting my content on my content, so no worries.
I mean,
So we got the full pledge in. It wasn't mine. It was my co-host, Larry. And so we managed to kind of unbox all that and show off all the figures. And we played through some more of it. But it comes with these chibi Marvel characters in terms of all that. So you have Hulk, and then you have the villains that come in red. Well, the giant box, and if you want to hear even more about it, you know, off our channel. I know that Tom Vassell said on the recent episode of Dice Tower that he had played everything in a weekend. So he had gotten through all of it. So that, I'm sure Dice Tower will have thorough review on all that. Not that they need a plug from me, but they are our network. So, so we played the Sinister Six versus the Guardians of the Galaxy. So we played as the Guardians characters because those are kind of our favorites on the stream. And I'd also played a little bit before. And the Sinister Six are interesting because normally you just have one villain that you're kind of following around, and you play these cards that just have one or two symbols. So it's very, like, friendly. I want to say family friendly, but I don't want to make it sound like it's, you know, only for families or something. But it's just friendly. What is it? Welcoming games is the term we're using for the Dice Tower Awards this year. And it's welcoming because there's not a lot of text on cards and you just follow these symbols. What's really clever is that somebody plays a card and then when it's your turn, you play one and you do the symbols on their card as well. So it really plays up the cooperative element of trying to do that. Well, the Sinister Six have six figures on the board and they all can't be damaged until you find their weakness. So you have to go around playing cards and tokens to be able to remove their weakness. And then you can kind of take them out one at a time as you go through. So that was actually really neat. It took this box, which this really feels aimed at families in terms of level and content and what's in there. And it was like, here you go. Here's something if you're kind of like a next level gamer, but you still want this game, or even right, if you had kids or you had people you were gaming with that you really like this game? Do you want to try the next step up? It's that perfect way to go. And then there's a crazy box that has like the, it has like a power glove in it and it has the rings, or, sorry, the stones, all the infinity stones. And I think you can set them all in there. So I think at some point we're probably going to stream that. It's like a campaign where you fight Proxima Midnight and all those characters in terms of all that. And I think I hear that one, you know, even ups the complexity more. But yeah, it's a really fun game and it's quick. Like it's 20, 30 minutes. We played two players on our stream and I don't even know with talking and showing things that we went much more than 35, 40 minutes. So it's kind of fun. Like if you lose, you'll just shuffle up and play again. If you win, you'll switch characters and try it again. Oh, let's try this now. Personally, for me, I'm kind of like over the bloat thing with Kickstarters where I don't want, I mean, it's stacks of boxes, you know, it's 8, 9, I don't want to store those. I'm trying to get my collection to be this behind me and move things on. So I don't know that I need that. Although you can take all the characters, pull an insert, and you can, you can basically get it down to maybe two boxes. Unless you're going to paint all your minis, then I know you're going to want them in different spots. And they do paint up really nice. I have to say, I like the chibis. I think they're interesting. They're different. But I can understand why somebody wouldn't like it if they're kind of more into the, you know, whatever the true nature of the character is or whatnot. But I really like Marvel United. That pledge, that all-in pledge or whatever you want to call it, was really fun. We enjoyed that. You can check that out on our channel.
Awesome. Well, the next game that I am going to talk about is one that has stolen my heart in a way almost no other board game has in my entire life.
I have caught you on a good week.
admittedly, I mean, so some of these I didn't play this week particularly. I've kind of cherry-picked some of the recent big hits. I will say before I say the name of the game that Ambi got a review copy of this game. She read, the rules and she sent me a message and she said, "Crystal, this board game was made for you." And I was like, "Wait, what?" And that is Rosetta, the Lost Language. It is from Story Machine Games, which is a little bit of a lesser known publisher. They've made a couple other titles that people might be familiar with. I'm pulling it up right now to see what those are. They have Danger Park Danger Park might not be out yet, but I've heard more about that. And there's a couple others, but like I was not super familiar with them prior to this game. So Rosetta the Lost Language is a cooperative game where you are trying to construct a brand new language cooperatively. Okay. And Arrival is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like Etymology is something that I super love.
I forgot. I watched. So when you agreed to be on the show, I went and watched The Arrival because I knew it was one of your favorite movies. I just watched it a week and a half ago. And I was supposed to bring it up in our banter in the beginning. And then you said that. And I forgot that I watched it because I knew you were going to be on the show.
That's so neat. No, I love Arrival. It is a brilliant movie. And it's a really good depiction of how language works and how humans perceive language and how, in theory, aliens would perceive language, obviously. Mm. But so this game is kind of like Arrival the board game, which just is so neat. So there are cards with the best term that I can use to describe them in an audio medium, I know some people are watching video, I don't have a copy of the game with me, but hieroglyphics would kind of be the term that I would most loosely use to describe these cards. They are not actual hieroglyphics. They are not real symbology from any real language, but it's just shapes and lines and other things kind of thrown together to make a symbol of some sort. And the person who is going to be giving clues to the rest of the group assigns a word or meaning to that symbol secretly. So they look at this thing and they go, okay, what could this mean? And they pick that secretly. Then the other players will start guessing words or phrases that they think that the symbol might mean. And rather than just saying yes or no, the person who determined what the definition was, if the answer that the group gave is really far off, they'll just scratch it out and you move on. If it is somewhat related in any tangential sense, they will then draw the word that was guessed in this made up language based on the definition that they assigned to the original symbol. So for instance, in a game that Ambie and I played recently, which is on our YouTube channel, if people want to see, it was on Twitch originally, and then we uploaded the VOD to YouTube. Mm-hmm. But like, there was a symbol on the card that kind of looked like a Z with like a little curve or a curl at the end of it. And I had in my head assigned that to mean something along the lines of pirate. And I think at some point Ambie guessed sailor. And so I drew a very straight looking Z symbol because I was like, okay, it's right. A person, but different and like not as like squirrely, you know, like it just, and like, and I can't explain to you how much fun this game is for me. I know that like words and language are not everybody's jam when it comes to games, but it is mine. And this game does it so well. It actually just recently got nominated for an American Tabletop Award. It didn't win, but I'm so glad it got nominated. And I hope this game gets a whole lot more buzz because it is so, so fun. And yeah, it's one of those things that you kind of have to see to understand. So if people want to check it out, they should go over to the Board Game Blitz YouTube channel and look at our playthrough there. But literally while we were Twitch streaming this game, like multiple people who were watching us went to Story Machine's website and ordered it right then. Like that's how compelling this game was. And that does not happen frequently when we Twitch stream. Like Story Machine actually like said, they were like, yeah, a bunch of people ordered it that night. Well, so,
and their copy went to do what it was supposed to do, right?
I mean, I think, yeah, that's kind of the purpose. And I love, you know, being able to feature games that are a little bit lesser known or from publishers that aren't as widely known yet. And I'm really looking forward to the new stuff that Story Machine is going to be putting out in the future as well. But yeah, Rosetta the Lost Language is literally like my game. Like it will be, I don't know how high, if I do my top 100 again at some point, I don't know how high it'll be, but it's going to be up there for me for sure.
And you played it with two?
Yes, we played it with two, but we also with the chat. So what was cool about it is for us playing one-on-one remotely, Ambie or I would be giving the clues, but then the other person and the chat could all cooperatively work together to try and figure stuff out. And we do that a lot, and it's really neat to have other people involved, even if we're only playing it two players, technically.
So I'm pretty sure, I apologize to Story Machine if I'm wrong, that this game is in retail. I think I can picture the box.
Okay.
On our new game, we now we have like a new games rack and table. So I'm pretty sure I can picture the box there. I'm going to the store tomorrow, so I'm going to check out for it. And if it can be played with two, because Kathy's huge into word games, like
oh my gosh, the
letter jam. Like
yes. Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah. And not to squash Rosetta Stone, but Rosetta, what is it called?
Lost Language.
Lost Language.
Yeah.
Have you played Master Word?
I have not.
Okay, so you need to play Master Word. It's literally mastermind with words. That's that, like, it's just that easy to describe. So
I played there's mastermind a word so much as a kid.
Yeah, there's a word and you're trying to get people to get to that word. And I think it starts with a clue like sports or medicine or whatever. And then people just guess whatever. And then you tell them how many of their guesses are correct. So like if it was an animal, they might guess four-legged. So then you would, you know, oh, they made three guesses and four-legged was correct. And you know, sharp teeth was correct, but wings was not. So you tell them two of their three are correct. And they work their way down the line until they run out of cards. Basically, you have a certain number of cards, and when you run out of those cards, you can't guess anymore, and your last guess has to be just what is the word in terms of that. It's great, and I think I should know this because I like do the Dice Tower Awards, but I'm pretty sure it was nominated for the 2020 Dice Tower Party Games. So it's
the only master. Is it two words, master word, or is it? Because when I look up a single word on Board Game Geek, the only
entry is two words.
From ninth.
Oh, I think it's like master fox. I think it's master word because there's a fox on it.
Okay, master word, two words. Oh yeah. It's a little like kind of a Mickey Mouse style artwork fox. Like
it's what's it's like that Canadian company Scorpion.
Oh, Scorpion Mask. Yeah,
Scorpion Mask, and I think it's yellow in the States.
Okay.
Yep, it's great.
I'm 100%.
And I think you could play it with two, but two in a chat would work for sure.
Yep, and that's what's, the chat helps us fill in the gaps all the time, and it's great, especially when I play my escape room games on Tuesday nights. I'm playing solo, but the chat is helping me, and so that makes it easier.
Nice. But Rosetta, the Lost Language, I don't want to lose that one in the other talk about others, so definitely check that one out, Crystal. Adored that game.
I really, 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 really do.
All right, I got one more here. And Zephra is like hot and cold on playing games. She really likes, she's like really close to a teenager. So that's my daughter. So she kind of knows that dad's into games. So it's like, I'm going to not be into games.
Yeah. But I mean, I get that.
Yeah. But when Brian and Rachel were living with us, they were playing Mariposas, the butterfly game. And so she kind of saw them playing that and loved that and walked through the store. And she said, oh, this game looks gorgeous. Like, I want to play that butterfly game. And so, of course, I, you know, scrounged up a copy of Papillon and we played this one. And it was interesting enough because we played this and she saw this box. But afterwards, she's like, no, I wanted to play the other one, the Spanish butterfly one. So now I've got to play Mariposas with her as well. But this one really impressed me. I had never seen anything but the cover of this game. And so it's a tile drafting game. And again, people have to go to the YouTube to see a little bit more of this if they're listening. But you kind of draft like rows. So you're bidding as to when you're going to go first. And then so if you go to first, you can pick any row or column. So you can see here the rows get smaller. So if I take four tiles, if I'm second, I only get three. And then there's like little garden gnomes that are really cute that you can get and stuff. But what's interesting is you're trying to build like little, groups of flowers, wildflowers by color. And then you get your, I don't even know if I can get one of these out. You get your, butterflies when you complete a section, and then you get to attach your butterflies with these little wooden clips to these 3D flowers.
Oh, that's cool.
And there's a whole bunch of them. And I have to admit when I saw it, I was like, well, that's neat, but could I have had some flowers that I just placed butterflies on? But when you take the little butterfly clips and you clip them on there and you play eight rounds of a game and there's 20 butterflies on your table clipped to these flowers, it looks like a beautiful butterfly field. Like it really does. It's a whole different thing from when there's one butterfly that you're clipping to you see all these butterflies. And then each of those flowers at the end of the game is an end game scoring, like a, you know, area control on each of the flowers, but there's a whole bunch. So it's not super cutthroat on the area control. Cause sometimes that's not my favorite thing when it's like, oh, there's three things we're vying over and you either get 1,000,000 points or you get nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So it was really pretty. It's very light, in terms of what's happening. I mean, you're just bidding these little caterpillars to go first and then drafting your set of tiles. And you can turn them. The tiles remind me a lot of Lanterns. Have you ever played that game?
Oh, yeah. I love Lanterns.
So they're kind of that diagonal cross section of flowers. And then you're trying to turn them to complete these. But, yeah, it's neat because in addition, they give you, like, these open green fields with little butterflies. And if you close those off instead, then you get to score all the butterflies. So it's giving you multiple ways to score. In fact, it has a score pad at the end. And whenever I think there's a score pad, I feel like there's enough going on, right, to make it complex. But it really, it felt pretty light in terms of what was happening and whatnot. But Zephyr was excited. She sat down, she played it, and I think we'll also try Mariposa's. Mariposa's feels like this one, the goal was very obvious, right? I'm trying to just get points by doing these things, and there's a little bit of competition. Whereas Mariposa's, have you played Mariposa's?
I have.
Yeah. It's like very, like, not just goal-oriented, but like plan-oriented, right? I need to plan, where am I going to fly and how am I going to get back? And it's like, you need to set that whole thing out in front of you. So there's a lot more to that. So we'll see how that one goes.
I definitely, in my first play of Mariposa's, I made the mistake of not planning well enough, you know, first play of any game. And all of a sudden, when I realized that like none of my butterflies were going to make it back, I was like, no. But then it was neat because I was able to pivot and focus more on the individual round goals. And like, you don't have to bring your butterflies back to win the game. I mean, I didn't win the game, but like, there are options.
Maybe.
Yeah, like, I think planning is definitely the best way to play Mariposa's, and I did not do that well in my first play.
Yeah, so this one's going to be a lot lighter, a lot friendlier. I mean, I just love that there's games with themes like this, right? Because if you go back, I don't want to be so harsh as to 10 years ago, but 20 years ago, there was no butterfly theme games, right?
No.
Like, it was going to be a little roll and write, and it was going to say 3+ on the box or whatever. And I'm not even trying to down those games, but that's all you had if you had butterflies. And now you've got strategy games with butterflies, you know, in terms of that. So, yeah, it's always kind of refreshing to play something like that. I don't know that it's something I'm rushing out to play again, but it's just nice to know that those themes exist for people who that's what they're, you know, wanting to play.
For sure. And I'm sure that that one with that field of butterflies would be great to play at a con, because you know people walking by are going to be like, what is that? That looks cool.
I was telling you, I was downing it at first. I was like, it's just these flowers and they're falling over and I have to set them all up. And these little clips that are breaking. And I was just frustrated with the structure. But once we played it, like, we took a picture.
Yep. And that's, I mean, the fact that there are publishers who are still putting out very, very like bland looking Euro games at this point baffles me. Like, sure, the theme can be bland. I mean, I don't like bland themes, for the record. I want all interesting themes in all my games. But like, the fact that they still use like brown and tan color palettes, I'm like, you have to make something that is social media friendly nowadays. Yeah. Like, you just have to. And plus, yeah, like at a convention, people walking by, you want them to go, what is that game? Without knowing anything about it, you want them to be interested in it. So I think a game like that is smart because, yeah, like, people are going to see it and be interested immediately.
Yep. Yeah, no, it was good. And that was published by Colossal Games. I didn't say that.
Awesome.
Anything else, or are we good?
I've got one more for you.
Let's do it.
Okay. This is a quick one, actually, anyway. So I, as part of my escape room streams that I do every Tuesday, I've been playing a bunch of games, including games that people know of, like the Exit series and the Unlock series. But I recently got to play an 18-card escape room game called The Kringle Caper, which is a Christmas-themed 1 hour escape room game in 18 cards. And I was like, how is 18 cards going to make a good 1 hour escape room? And I will tell you, it is delightful. It came out right at the end of 2020. I think it didn't really get to hit before the Christmas season completely. And so a lot of people probably missed this one. It's from Grand Gamers Guild. And they're known for other titles like,
Endangered.
The Artemis Project, Endangered, Endeavor, Age of Sail. So they've got some other big titles. But this one is, you know, obviously a small game that you can fit in your pocket. And it is, I've already described it. It's a Christmas-themed 18-card escape room game. And what's neat about this game is it does technically rely on a little bit of outside knowledge, especially about like Christmas themes, like Christmas carols, names of reindeer, things like that. But it has a really neat and robust online hint system. So if you are a person who does not have the outside knowledge necessary for this game, they'll provide you with the outside knowledge without solving the puzzle for you in this hint system, which I think is really clever.
That's awesome.
Because I tend to not like escape room games that completely rely on your knowledge of the outside world, because if you don't have it, then what do you do? And I think, for the record, most of the information in this game are things that most, at least Americans, would commonly know. Like, you might forget one of the reindeer's names and need a quick refresher. But like for me, I was like, no, on Donner, like I sang or I recited the whole thing from The Night Before Christmas. No. Is it called The Night Before Christmas? Yeah. The poem or whatever.
Not The Nightmare Before Christmas. That's a whole different thing.
Yes. That's what my brain was thinking I said. I was like, did I say nightmare? I
Jack the Pumpkin King.
Gotta love Sally and Jack, man. The classic. Go. But yeah, I would highly recommend this one. I know that it is April right now, but I think people should put this on their radar for potential stocking stuffers at the end of this year, because it is super fun and it would be a great family activity. It is on the lighter side difficulty wise, as far as escape room games go. So it would honestly be perfect. And Grand Gamers Guild has said that they potentially have plans for other escape room 18 card games themed around other holidays. I don't have any specific information about that, but I'm looking forward to anything else that they put out, because this one was great.
Come on, Arbor Day escape room.
I mean, honestly, that sounds kind of delightful, doesn't it? Like,
well, actually, Earth Day would be really cool. They could actually do a really cool Earth Day, like clean up the earth kind of thing. That'd be really neat.
Like there's a lot of areas for them to get creative there, but the Kringle Caper does a really good job of bringing Christmas into an escape room game.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's 7 games that we reviewed.
Well, that's awesome.
That's a whole bunch of games, as we do. And that's my new thing, because I love reviewing games. That's the one part I've missed. I mean, not that I couldn't put it on the channel, but I tend to do so many things live. In terms of that, although I am planning, we'll see when I actually do it, but I want to do a, and you were kind of, I guess you were kind of hinting towards this when you were talking about Queens. I want to do like a, you know, 15 games you should go back and play. Like kind of give people that list of games that it's like, you know what, this was really popular for a reason, or people have talked about this for a reason. So I've been trying to find games that are outside the top 500 on BGG. Because that's there's some where you would be like, oh, you should really go back and play this, but it's in the top 500, so it feels like it's kind of already, you know, being carried in terms of that.
Absolutely.
So I thought that would be a fun list, and I wanted to kind of do that live, because I thought that might be a fun thing to interact with people over and have people suggest other things. So, and I feel like that would be useful to people, because it feels like sometimes you hear the same games over and over on top 10 lists, you know?
Yeah, that is definitely the case. And I think like me, you know, in late 2019 and all of 2020, there are definitely some games that some of us just kind of missed because we didn't have the usual browsing around a convention or other, like just the con buzz that would typically happen. Like that stuff didn't exist. And so I think some stuff slipped through the cracks a little bit more so than usual. And there are some real gems out there.
Well, I'll tell you the gem that I still want to play with you. But we need a group. It's got to be a big group. The bigger, the better. But it is a game from Breaking Games called We're Doomed.
Oh, so here's what's funny. Okay, Sterling, I know, buddy. It's life, you know. He heard something outside. I got a copy on the Dice Tower Cruise a year ago. It was like one of the free games that all of the attendees got. And I typically, as a Dice Tower contributor, do not take any of those games. Yeah, I know. Life is real rough, buddy. but like, I waited until everybody has their games, and then, you know, there are always extra copies, obviously, of things. And yes, We're Doomed was there. And so I was like, okay, Brant wanted me to get this when I was at a con last year. I was like, I'm going to pick it up. But yeah, I haven't had a chance to play it because
it needs a big
pandemic.
Group. It needs 8, 9, 10 people. It's so interesting. It's just, you know, it's 15 minutes to get off the planet and people are going to die and you've got to build a spaceship working together. So like the first time I played it at Gen Con, we're like, okay, we're all set down. We're like, let's just work together. Like everybody just work together. And the first card we flip over says there's only there's only going to be 2 seats on the ship, no matter what you do. So suddenly we could not work together. It was just amazing. So it's a really fun game, but I think it's one that, you know, it's fun. You play it a couple times. I don't know that it's, you know, a top 100 game, but I just think it's so clever. I wish they would release an expansion with just another set of cards, but it's just got that high energy and it really plays in 15 minutes because it's got a big old timer. Boom. That's it.
Would it be possible to play it remotely in any way, shape, or form?
No, because okay. There's literally cards that just try to stall you for time. So okay. It'll say, like, pass this card to the person with the longest hair. Pass this card to the person with the shortest name. Pass, like, you just have to go as fast because it's just trying to get you to waste time. Funny stuff like that, which you just couldn't do. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, we'll have to wait, but that's okay. It's always something to have something to look forward to. So I think that's good.
Absolutely. Well, I'll have to make sure that I grab that one off my shelf. Because, yeah, like, since I got it on the Dice Tower cruise, it was literally, like, 1 month before everything shut down last year. So I just didn't get a chance to bring it to the table.
Nice. Well, I want to thank you for giving me a second sunset today, because watching the light disappear from your window out west in Las Vegas.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of sun left out there, but not a whole lot at this point. It'll be disappearing shortly. I love this time of year, though, when it's bright out after I get off work at 5, it's so nice.
Yeah, it looks like you get light a little later than us. We're on the, so actually, interesting little anecdote. So when in Indianapolis, that is still Eastern Standard Time.
Okay.
It's very far away.
On the other side, right.
So Connecticut is, you know, pretty close. Obviously, we've got east of us is Maine. And then you push into that time zone that nobody knows exists except Rodney Smith, because he lives in it. And watch it play, because he's way out east in Prince Edward Island and all that. So we're kind of on one edge of a time zone. And then Indianapolis, it stretches too far, honestly. They just wanted to be in that time zone. So I would call home sometimes, and I'm walking around Indianapolis and it's bright, and my wife would be like, oh, are you good? Are you by yourself? Are you being safe? And I'm like, oh, it's bright outside. She's like, are you kidding? It's pitch black here right now. And just that difference of, cause it's about 14 hours for us to drive to Indianapolis. So it's
wow. Cool. Yeah. How could those be in the same time zone? That's like,
they just want to be, it's just that people want to be in that time zone. Cause then it's like just north of them is Chicago, and that's the other time zone. So
yeah, that's central time. So
yeah, Indianapolis is the farthest west you can go, basically. So anyway, just interesting little thing, but yeah, it was neat to watch the sunset behind you there again today. So, but yeah, with the sun going down and it being this late, it is time for math teachers to go to bed. So thank you so much for joining me, Crystal. I appreciate it. Why don't you tell people again where they can find you?
Absolutely. So you can find me on the Board Game Blitz podcast, which is available wherever you find your podcasts. We are also on Twitch, twitch.tv/Board Game Blitz, streaming at least twice a week, if not more. You can find me on the Dice Tower's YouTube channel on Dice Tower Tonight. And you can find me personally on Twitter at Crystal Dax, where I am tweeting about all kinds of stuff, not just board games, but Star Trek and my dogs and any other random things that happen to pop into my head. I am the most active on Twitter by far of all my social media pages. So that's a good place to find me if you just want to see what I'm thinking about.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening. The Portal Game Podcast. Thank you for watching on our YouTube channel, Step Into the Portal. This has been episode 166, Rhymes with Crystal. Until next time, I'm your host, The Brant, and I hope you step into the portal. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.